Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. You're listening to episode number 409 and broadcasting to you live out of Central Kentucky tonight. This is one of your co-hosts, Stephen Zimmer, and I will be joined just shortly by the lovely, the vivacious, the loquacious Holly Phillippe, but she's not with us just yet. We're running a little bit behind. It has been a busy week, to say the least, to say the least. Why? Because, have the honor of being one of three main pro guests this weekend at a writer's retreat in West Virginia. I, along with Michael Nost and Tim Wagoner, both just incredible creative and writing instructors, both of them, you know, award-winning authors, and Michael's a Bram Stoker award-winning editor, and all kinds of stuff. These guys are just amazing. Yeah, amazing, both of them. And yes, yours truly will be joining them to critique some up-and-coming writers at this retreat this weekend and provide constructive feedback and all that kind of good stuff. I'll be there in a capacity as an editor and author. And yeah, so it's going to be a busy weekend. So this week's going to be a little bit shorter week. So I had to cram a whole week in 4 days, basically. So so you get the picture, because Holly's having to do that as well. So, but it should be a whole lot of fun as well. And really, really looking forward to it. And but getting underway tonight, chat room is open. Be sure to refresh, because if it's a little finicky, sometimes it is, just refresh the page and you should be able to access the chat room. And the first two in there, I saw Carol Preflatish come in just ahead of Amy Lee McCorkle. Carol Preflatish, the award-winning author and screenwriter, and Amy Lee McCorkle, award-winning filmmaker, author, screenwriter, and definitely got a lot of projects in the works here. Carol has definitely a new one coming down the pike. I do want to give out a little praise coming from my side as an editor. I just recently, or last week, I had finished up new novels by Lawrence Wheel, Return of the Goat Man, and also by a new novel from Carol Preflatish for her Nathan Perry mystery series, Murder in Mysticalo. And it is going to be a great installment. In my view, it could very well be viewed by readers as their strongest yet. Yeah, excellent writing. As always, Carol turns in clean copy. Great storytelting, and this one really is got some nice twists and turns, and it's one of those that you're deep enough in the franchise that Carol has worked in a lot of cool little Easter egg kind of things for readers that are familiar with the other books. They can all be read standalone, of course. You don't have to read the franchise in order. But for those that have read some of the other books, there's some neat references, builds on characters that you've met in the setting, in the town. And it's got all that kind of depth that starts occurring later in a franchise. And I love to see that when that starts breaking out. And yeah, Carol did a really, really good job with sprinkling some of those nuggets in there for readers. So yeah, congrats, Carol, on that. And that's going to be coming right around the corner. So definitely want to give her a shout out. Good stuff. And like I said, Holly will be joining shortly. It's been a really busy week, and with the Imagine Awards, we have been it's been a lot of work there going on, ongoing, because the field of finalists is being determined, and we want to be careful about that, of course. So you're thinking that we might have an outside shot of finishing that up this week, but we said, you know, of course, in public posts, you know, it'd be toward the end of the month. And it's going to look like it's going to skew a little bit toward that. Looks like we should be going public on the website on Monday, and which means that we'll be able to give a full report and definitely broadcast the list of finalists on next week's show. So, yes, it will occur before the end of March, as promised. Some categories definitely needed a little more time, like some of them, like short story category, for instance. That's got a lot to it. That one got a lot of submissions. And so, yeah, some of these take time, a little extra time to get everything fairly evaluated. So that is coming. We're looking right now it looks pretty good for Monday being the day that it'll go on the website again, and Wednesday should be next Wednesday, which is the 27th of March, should be the day that so on Star Chamber show that we will be able to read all the finalists and celebrate with you. So, yeah, definitely going to be good. And I think Holly may be with us. I was expecting her to come in a little later, so you're going to have to listen to me talk for a little while. But it looks like you get the grace of having Holly, and I'm going to check and see if her mic's on. Hello, Holly, are you there?
I hope so. Hello.
There she is. I was covering for you. I knew you were running a little behind, so I was just going over the news and I gave them the info about.
Hey guys, I say I run a circus around here, and between homeschooling, the teenager grandkids and take care of their stuff and cooking and cleaning and doing Imaginarium. So yeah, it's a lot. So, yeah.
Oh yes.
I finally get time to sit down. But yes, I heard you talking about the Imagines. Yeah, just give us a few more days. Almost got it. Didn't want to rush it, obviously. But yeah, we've got to take a good look at everything. Everybody's got to take a good look. But I will want to say, people that did submit, please pay attention to your emails, because I will be emailing folks in the next few days for you to get your copies and everything sent in that I need for the judges for their final judging.
Yeah, some categories. Publicize though, and that will be put in the email. Yeah, not for public publication yet.
We will announce officially everyone on Monday, and then next Wednesday we will go down that list for those of you that listen and may have missed, any of the social media or may not have social media, because I know a lot of people are jumping ship, and I don't blame them. But it's a necessary evil for us. We have to have it. But here we are. And I did get some more programming added. Stephen, if you want to talk about that here in a bit. I did get a few more workshops and panel added. If you want to announce
since
that.
Since last week's announcement? Because I did 10 new panels last week. Was this a new edition?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, dear God.
He didn't even know about it. What about that?
No, I didn't even know about this. This is look,
see,
scoop.
Look,
I even got
brand
a scoop.
New, guys. Brand
How
new, guys.
About that?
He didn't even know about it. Hey.
No, I didn't.
He's finding out the same time you all are. See, I'm sneaky that way.
Very sneaky.
I added
sneaky.
Three workshops, and I've added
one new panel.
Let's see here. One new panel.
Oh, heck, let's give everybody the scoop then. Okay, going over to new workshops. We're going to have a new workshop presented by Miranda Darrow, and she is an editor guest. And Dash of Love is the title of this panel, adding a romantic subplot to novels of any genre. So, yes, adding a romantic subplot to novels of any genre. Also presented by Miranda Darrow is going to be six-step revision process. And it's Miranda Darrow's six-step revision process, how to revise from
pretty
a first
cool.
draft to a polished manuscript. And, it's definitely a very, very targeted, very succinct outline here. And, we're going to get this up
website.
On the site.
Yeah,
read that.
Make sure you read down that, because, it's going to be thorough. She's going to have handouts and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it is a really good, in-depth workshop on the revision process.
Yep. And so that's going to be very valuable for a lot of folks, because that's something that a lot of folks get eternally tied down to and end up having 10 years before they finish their novel. This will help them cut that down. Some poor authors get cursed in that cycle of revisions. So, yes, pay attention to that one. A lot of folks, I think, need to maybe attend that one. But,
yeah, that's
And we also have a presentation by Carrie Fay. And this one is called Seven Layers of Plotting. So, yes, whether you are a charts and spreadsheets plotter or creative that writes by the seat of their pants, talks about structure, and workshop participants are going to be introduced to the seven layers of plotting, which melds Dan Wells' Story Matrix with Jessica Brody's Save the Call, the Cat Writes a Novel method. So, yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting workshop. It looks all about the art of plotting. So that's a
and
new one that's just been added.
She's going to talk about the basic processes of creating your own seven-layer plot using examples from popular books to films such as Harry Potter and the Hunger Games, while also receiving handouts illustrating each of the seven layers for plotting. She said she may bring bookmarks. Mm-hmm. I said, well, that'd be neat.
That's awesome. And then we're going to have a panel. Again, this is not a workshop. This is a new panel on unputdownable openings. Let me get that straight again. Unputdownable openings. And that is moderated by Miranda Darrow as well. This is a panel on the first pages where panelists give their feedback on the first page of fiction manuscripts and how to make them really catch a reader. So, yeah, that's another one that'll be invaluable. And, you guys just got a scoop. That's not even on the website. That has not been announced in our email newsletter yet. That's a scoop. You got three new workshops and one new panel, folks. There you go. When you listen to Star Chamber show, you get the latest. You get the latest.
You never know what I'm up to.
And that goes in addition to the announcements that we've had in the past week for you. And you've heard both names already. We had three new panelists announced and one new individual patron. The panelists are Miranda Darrow, who I just mentioned. She's going to be presenting two workshops and moderating the panel I just mentioned. But she is an author and an editor and an amazingly talented one. And so, yes, definitely a good guest for you to meet. And then we also have Carrie Fay, who is joining us as an official panelist, and she is an author. And then also today is a longtime Imaginarium favorite who we love, Dave Creek, author and journalist. And Dave has many science fiction novels to his credit, and his short stories have also appeared in Analog and Apex magazines, Amazing Stories, and various anthologies. But, yeah, just a superb author with an extensive broadcast media background and a great panelist. Somebody to definitely meet. We announced him as well. And then joining us as a patron, which we are very grateful for, we announced him as a panelist last week. But, you know, he loves us enough. He became a patron, too. So thank you to Jim Miller. And, yeah, he was the one that we talked about that had the 24-year military career as a special operations and transport pilot who now writes thrillers and also writes under he also has a pen name that he writes under, and that would be J. Esker Miller, and has some cool stuff under that deals with, like, it looks like it's about, some of his books are about cryptids, so he keeps the straight thriller, the war thrillers that are based in times such as the World War II, Cold War, and Vietnam in one area, then under J. Esker Miller, he has these other thrillers that involve some cool speculative stuff, it looks like a little bit of cryptid kind of things in it, which, of course, appeals to me. Actually, after reading about them, I want to check a couple of those out, but thank you, Jim. Patrons help in a big way, and yeah, it's definitely something that helps the convention a lot, so we appreciate that. So I will go ahead and right now give you the folks who our guest is about on deck. Hi to Dwan Hearn Moon in the chat room. I will say hello to Rylan real quick, but Sandy Lender and Ren Garcia brought you tonight's show, and so give them your time and attention and support both of them. If you online tonight, go to Sandy's YouTube channel, Sandy Says Read, and give that a subscribe and hit that bell for notifications because she's got a great BookTube channel. And then we'll go over and give you a little bit about Ren, but here's a bit from Sandy. Thank you, Sandy.
Hey, Star Chamber listeners. Did you know that author Sandy Lender has a BookTube channel on YouTube? She is using the platform to talk about books and stories and indie authors and new characters you might not have heard of before. And she's doing it all with a positive spin. Check out Sandy Lender at Sandy Says Read on YouTube for all the creative bookish goodness.
Thank you, Sandy. Sandy says read, folks. So, always good advice. Now I'll go over to Ren, and of course, creator of the League of Elders series, and he's got that important question at the end, and then we'll go right to our guest of the evening.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Ren. We're definitely weird enough for you, and thank you, as always, for your support. And hope he definitely comes out, joins us next summer. But, yeah, thank you very much to both Sandy Lender and Ren Garcia. And now I'm going to get you all ready for tonight's guest. Tonight's guest is an award-winning author, publisher, comic creator, and actor. He is known for his best-selling, highly acclaimed Snow series of thrillers and the Sheriff Tom Myers mysteries. A multi-genre writer with a flair for pulp fiction, he writes everything from novels to novellas, short stories to comics to graphic novels and screenplays. And so you might know who I'm talking about now. He's a Star Chamber show favorite, great guy, the one, the only, Bobby Nash. Bobby,
hey.
You are on. There he is.
I like that whole flair part. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you know, we always got to do the grand entrance, you know, here on the show for you.
No, I dig it.
Spare no expense. But, yeah, good to have you back.
Yeah. I usually just introduce myself with, I write stuff. So
you write stuff.
I write stuff. I do stuff. I know stuff.
I'm similar. On panels, I usually say I'm a storyteller. It's not, I don't get too crazy, but let's say you know, want to know a little bit about a few of the series. But, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I have a sign on my convention tables that says, Bobby Nash, he makes up stuff for a living.
There you go. I think I've seen that sign. Yes, I have seen that sign.
Yeah.
I love it.
I stole the idea. I did a book signing that used that, only they didn't use the word stuff. I did kind of PG it up a little bit. But,
Nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, man, that is great. Well, I'm always impressed when you post your display because it's literally a traveling library now. I mean, just you. it's pretty
I'm gonna need a bigger
impressive.
Car. Yeah. At the rate I'm going, I'm going to need a bigger car. Yeah.
You can be like the Jumpmaster Press guys and have to get one of those trailers with the graphic wrap around the side or something. But
have my own like corner booth.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah, it's about gotten there because one of the fun things, and like I said, I always see your posts, if follow you on a more than one social media platform, but it's always fun because you stay very active, and I know you can't, you know, obviously it's hard for you to, you know, because of, you know, your dad's situation to come do overnights, like you said, but you are very active in your area, and you do quite a bit. And it's like every week, you know, it seems I turn around and you're a guest author here, or you're doing a book fair there, or some kind of signing event. And yeah, you've been busy, say the least.
Yeah, I love doing the events. My dad just can't travel quite like he used to, and he also, conventions are not his thing, because I know last year he actually went with me to a couple of out of staters, and he was bored to death. And so I don't subject him you know, if he, you know, so, but he's in a place where I can't be that far away in case he needs something.
Right.
But, so I'm doing.
Most of my
stuff events are where I can go do it, go home that night.
Right.
So everything's within a 3-hour-ish, maybe I can push 4. But yeah, it's going to be a good 3-hour drive. Yeah, everything's within that.
We're just beyond your range, barely. But
it's hard to do Kentucky and back in the same day. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That'd be a haul.
Because I would love.
Yeah, we miss you.
I would love to come up and do Imaginarium. I also do some work with the Potemkin Pictures guys that are right there in Lexington also.
I'd love to come up
and do stuff with all of you. It just doesn't work right now. Yeah.
Yep.
I love your trips. I have that too. I know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Holly definitely understands.
Weekend excursion to Indiana, where I have to do my honey-do list. My dad passed away, you know, a couple years ago, so Mom always has me a honey-do list.
I have a few of those.
Whoa, man.
I know that feeling all too well. But my dad does like to travel. He does like to ride. So we do get out and do at least once a week. You know,
same thing though.
We go and we're able to get back that night. We may be gone 8 or 9 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
But we started that. He and my mother used to enjoy that. They would, you know, after they retired, they would take long day trips and whatnot. And then after she passed, you know, it was like it was important to keep him doing that. And then during the quarantines and lockdowns, we started doing these where we would be gone most of the day. You didn't have to go anywhere. It was like we can just ride. And so
take a drive.
Yeah. We visit a lot of like the state parks and, you know, grab some lunch, sit by the lake. So we've toured a lot and we've found some places. I'm always taking photos of locations. I may have told you this before, but we've kind of made a little bit of a game about it. We'll find cool looking little locations and I'm like, I could hide a body there, you know? And so I'm like, so they've kind of become research trips because we're looking for like what could happen here, you know? So yeah,
sure.
So that's happened a few times where places we visited have made their way into stories as locations for things.
Well, if you're using it also for that, then you know you can write off all the gas.
Oh yeah,
on those trips. Yeah. So.
Well, we write off the miles. We write off the miles because that actually works better for us. We do that a lot. It's kind of become a little bit of a game. We get out and we'll just go. It's like we've never been here before. Great, we'll go and you know. I've gotten whole scenes. I've gotten whole story ideas. You know, from like, interesting. And it clicks an idea. And so, it's really good. And restful, you know, get you out of the house. And it was nice. So we've kept that up. We do it at least once a week, sometimes twice, but usually because I have to kind of rein him in a little because I do still have to work.
I understand.
But during the week, the other day, we go have lunch together and
there's definitely a balance.
Yeah. I love your post because every time you go on adventure with them, it's like you also have a treasure hunt. And then you come back and you share the most cool stuff on LinkedIn or whatever platform, you know, you're posting on. And I look at your haul. And it's just the classic golden age paperbacks, or you find comic books, or you find memorabilia, or maybe an action figure or poster.
It's just crazy
how much cool stuff. It's like, it's cool. I mean, it brings back good memories, all the stuff you find. And some gems. You've got some gems out there.
Yeah, because we will see if we see like a used bookstore or a mom-and-pop bookstore or – thrift stores, flea markets, and we're like, I'll stop and look and see what they got. And There's a few places. Yeah, I found some really cool and not expensive stuff because I don't have, you know, I can't afford to like be spending big money.
A
but I'll find like, I'll find things for just a few bucks, and I'm like, that's going home with me. And The problem now is if I keep doing these things, I'm going to need a bigger house. Because I'm sitting here. Because this is, I know this is being radio and all. You can't see it, but in front of me, there's a table stacked with books about 3 feet tall. There's stacks over there that are about 5 feet tall that I'm just waiting to tip over.
Don't worry. Don't worry, Bobby. Holly's on me all the time. When it comes to books, vinyl and CDs, my addiction. Yeah, I've got the same problem.
Our bedroom, you know, because I hate clutter. I hate clutter, and our whole downstairs, their whole entire wall is nothing but this bookshelf that his dad had built years ago. So it's just covered with these
huge
books.
Yeah.
And our bedroom, he has, you know, to be Red Pals on his side, just piles of books. You know, stacked up neatly because of me. I'm a neat freak. And I have my neat little pals and my pals beside my bed on a little table on my dressers. I got two over here. But one of the cats yesterday.
Is a cat. It was a cat. That was not my fault.
Quite a few of Steven's little to be red pal there and made a mess.
Uh-huh.
I said, you are dealing with it, sir.
I did. It was my lovely Vicky. I know which cat it was. It was Vicky. My sweet little innocent Vicky.
Yeah. My stats are neat-ish. It's one of those things, too. It's weird. Then I'll need to find something and can't. I'm in the process now. I'm getting some new bookshelves and, you know, making more, you know, trying to get up from stacks actually onto bookshelves. But as you know,
it's
a process.
It's fun, too, because, like, in mind, people are amused because they look at some of the spines and read, like, you know, History of the Parthians next to Lore of the Nephilim next to Clive Barker's Books of Blood. You know, it's just one of the more bizarre kind of collections around, but it does work. I do keep it in pretty good order now.
Because sometimes I'll find a book, and I was like, you know what, that's just either the coolest cover or the coolest title.
Yeah.
I got to have going home with me. So.
Well, you find some really collectible stuff. I mean, you find some Golden Age paperbacks, and you find pulp stuff, and you find comic books that are you know, classics. And, I mean, my eyes are always going wide every time I see one of those hauls of yours.
Yeah. Yeah, between the searching various places while we're out and then going to conventions and finding things, or, you know, I also sometimes do some online shopping. I go looking for little out-of-the-way treasures or not the usual things. I'm not going looking for the stuff I can buy anywhere. I'm looking for, ooh, those are neat. I've never heard of this. Or I'll run across something and go, oh, that's cool. I'll put that on the look-for list. And so, it's finding interesting things. Or sometimes it's finding things that I had as a kid that I'd love to have again.
Yeah. That's what gets me.
Then there's that emotion and memory that's tied to those books. And,
And that hits me with books and vinyl. I mean, CDs obviously came out a little later, but the books and vinyl. I sometimes I'll come across something that really gives me a tug in that area, especially. And brings back good stuff. I just got done editing a book on rare book collecting, and I got a real appreciation for rare books, and it makes me think, you know, when you're out looking at all these little nooks and crannies of retail out there, you know, who knows, you might even come across one of those gems that's worth like $5,000-$10,000 or something too, because that's how it gets found. Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you go to like some of these, like the thrift stores or the flea markets or places like that or swap meets or whatever where people have – we cleaned out my grandmother's closet, and she just said sell everything. They don't know what they've got, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you look, you'll find treasures. And but I always look for stuff that's just interesting to me, and, you know, It's not a there's no real system to it. If I see it and my brain goes, I want that, then that's how I decide what I get.
Well, you'd be proud of me, Bobby, because I walked. Oh yes, how much does it cost? I swore to Holly, I was like on a challenge one night. They had to go out and look for something in a half price book, and so I was going with her and Rebecca and Jordan, and I promised her. I said, I'm actually going to walk in a half price book, and I said, no matter what I see, I swear I won't buy anything. And I made it a goal. I got the tractor beam hit me more than once in there where I was tempted.
Yeah.
But I actually made it out of there without spending money. I couldn't believe it. It was like Holly was half in shock, I think. But yeah.
And sometimes I do a lot of tie-in stuff as well. So sometimes I'm also buying books because I've been hired to write that character. And so that's a good excuse to go buy some books. And I've already got books with that character here, but it's an excuse to go buy some new ones. I recently bought a whole mess of the Destroyer novels because I was going to do a Remo Williams story.
Ooh.
So I love those books. And I only have a handful. So I found some at a really great price. Actually, it was through social media. There's a gentleman on Instagram that's always putting books up and just goes, these books are for sale. And
nice.
So I've bought books from him before, and so I was just like, I just messaged him, and it's like, hey, do you have any Destroyer novels? And he goes, yes. And I told him why, and he goes, great, I've got these. I'll sell them to you for this. I'm like, awesome, I'll take them. Yeah, 2 days later,
fantastic.
I got a box of Destroyer books. Yeah. So
fast
things
shipping.
Like that are pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Well,
he knew
a good
I was on
contact.
A deadline, so he popped it, you know. So, yeah, so stuff like that. Yeah, so sometimes I love the hunt more than anything else, you know. Because, like you said, sometimes you buy them and you're like, oh, my God, that's so cool. And you come home, you put it on a shelf, and you may not touch it again for a year or two. But the searching and that sense of discovering it and finding it, oh, that's I love that. I love that treasure hunt kind of thing. And I think it's kind of how I tell
that's how it works.
Like, you know, it's like, it's like I'm looking for treasure, you know.
Exactly. That's exactly it. See, Holly, it's
Steven
all about treasure.
Too much treasure.
That's right. Yes. You know, I just don't sell it and make any money from finding it.
That's it.
So.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'll find a book in some obscure, you know, time and period in the world. Yeah, someday I'm going to write something that's based on this. I need to have this to pick it up.
And then when you finally write that book, you use the internet for research anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, right. Yeah. Oh, my word. Stephen and his research book. Boy.
And then, of course, in addition to that, there's like, You know, especially like, and you probably have this too. I've got a whole shelf that's just nothing but books friends of mine wrote.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
I've got them everywhere.
So it's a very eclectic mix of what I have in here. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's fun.
Move,
keep posting.
I don't want to have to move this crap. So,
no.
I'm here for the duration.
Yeah, it's like we got.
Not me.
Yeah, we got. Yeah, those.
I
those
get
posts.
Off this
that, yeah, we got those posts, and then we've got the posts from you where you do the custom art for your fans that order books from you.
Oh,
I always love those.
Yeah.
Those are fun. That's another regular post from Bobby Nash.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that started as kind of just a. It was not intended to be a thing. I was just in the mood to draw one day. So I did it. And then I did it for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped. And then people were like, wait, why didn't I get a picture on this? So it became a thing. And so, which I love to draw. So it was really cool.
You're good.
So I did
that. You're good.
And right now I've been doing, it was just a lark and I do it just for fun. I bought some like blank bookmarks. And I've been drawing custom bookmarks. I mean, I'll take them to shows and sell them and whatnot. But yeah, so I'm sitting here at night while I'm watching TV. I'll sit here with my little lap desk and in the chair, and I'm deciding what characters to draw, and I just pull characters from wherever, whatever hits me, and I'll draw them on the bookmark. And then at the top, there will be like a word balloon with something bookmark-related or reading-related, mm-hmm. usually attached to that character. And so I've been doing those. And so it's kind of a nice way to kind of relax at the end of the workday. I'm watching TV. I'm doodling. It's relaxing. It's fun. So I had to laugh. A publisher that I have written for contacted me and said, "Hey, I didn't know you could draw. Hey, we're doing full page illustrations with each story in this anthology. We're short a couple. You want to draw some, you know?" So I'm like, "Sure." And so, I actually did. There's an upcoming. I did a Zorro anthology last year, and there's new one coming out this year. A new Zorro anthology. So not only do I have a story in it, I will have three pieces of art in it. So that's
nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Cool.
Yeah. My publisher was like, "How did we not know you could draw?" I was like, "Nobody hires me to draw." She says, "What we do now."
I'm a storyteller, damn it. I'm not an artist. Yeah.
Now I can see it. It's gonna be like Clyde Barker. You know, he first, of course, got known for his prose, and everybody later discovered, oh yeah, he's an amazing artist too, and he has all these books of art and all his art that came out in books. Now we're gonna have Bobby Nash art books. Can't wait. That's gonna be excellent.
But I enjoy it. I, you know, because that was my dream growing up. That's what I wanted to be, was a comic book artist.
As an artist.
And, you know, turns out nobody would hire me to be a comic book artist. So I started writing, you know, primarily to have stuff to draw. But then the writing kind of took over. And, so what, 40 years later, finally, somebody sees the art and
goes, "Hey."
Somebody
sees the journal.
Yeah.
It's weird how that works. You're never too old, right? Because you just don't know. And there's been people,
you know,
that didn't start acting. Morgan Freeman was up in his 50s or something before he ever started acting. You know, I mean, there's unlimited possibilities. Yeah. How old was you when you first started acting for your first film you acted?
I was 39, 38, 39 when I did my first. Because I do remember, because it was in the first year. I think I was 39 because I remember I worked on one thing. I went on Friday and I was 39. And when I went home Saturday, I was 40 because it was on my birthday.
Oh, wow.
right in that area, 39, yeah. And then, so it's like, well, you know, it's like, I'm blanking on his name. He was in Die Hard and Harry Potter and...
Bruce Willis? No.
No, the bad guy.
Alan Rickman.
You know, Die Hard was his first, like, big movie. He was 46.
Wow.
Yeah, you know? That's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah,
That's what I said, you just don't know. You might become a famous author at 60. I mean, you really don't know, you know?
Yeah,
you can't predict
people's
fate or the universe, and it's funny like that. But, yeah, I mean, that's why I tell people never give up because you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. You know?
Right, and even if you look back, I mean, the young me who was 18, 19, 20, if I was to see what I do now, I would think, "Oh my God, you've made it!" But here in the here and now, I'm thinking, "Man, I still got a long way to go."
Yep.
So
it's perspective,
it's a sliding
right?
Scale,
doing what you love. You're doing what you love and getting paid for it. So hey, it's a win-win, right?
It is very nice to be able to do it. You know, my commute is I walk across the hallway from my bedroom to my office.
Yep.
You know, I can work in sweatpants and a t-shirt. You know,
he does every day.
We have common ground.
I'm doing this interview. I'm doing this interview in sweatpants and a t-shirt.
I'm in pajamas. I just took a shower, I'm in pajamas. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And hey, since this is audio, I didn't have to comb my hair.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, I look like a wreck.
Audio,
I need to be, admitted to a hospital or something. I mean, I look a wreck. But, that's the beauty.
Yes, you can be disheveled. You can be disheveled and not worry
about
it.
That's right.
It's beautiful.
But I love it. It's fun. I enjoy what I do, and I get to make stuff up all day. And then I've also been very fortunate. I get to play with characters. Like I said, with Zorro and Remo Williams, guys like that. I get to play with those kind of characters, and that's fun, getting to play with those characters you either grew up watching or reading. Or, I got to write a Lone Ranger story. That was really cool for me. Kolchak the Night Stalker, I got to write a couple with him. Who else? The Green Hornet. So doing stuff like that. I have a ball doing stuff like that. And just because
that's cool.
I think most of us, when we start out, especially if the creative bug bites us when we're children, that the first thing we probably do is create stories with those characters that we've seen on TV or we read in a book comic or read in a book. So it's kind of fun to get to officially play with those characters. I mean, I still do some fan stuff too. I've written some scripts for some of the Star Trek fan film folks. I mentioned the Potemkin guys there in Lexington with you. They do these little short 15-20 minute Star Trek fan film things. They built their own sets and they're really nice. And I've done several for them and for the Farragut guys who were down in South Georgia. It's fun stuff. I did it to primarily when I started was to see if I could do it. I'm not good at writing stuff for the heck of it. I usually need a reason. So I couldn't stop doing my other work to write a screenplay just because. But if you're going to film it, now I've got a reason. And so I started doing it to see if I could do it. Turns out I enjoy doing it. So whenever an idea hits me and I've got a little free time, I will pop something together and send it to them and say, you like this? And they just put one out day before yesterday, Starship Webster episode called Periphery. They're on YouTube.
On YouTube.
Look them up. They're fun. They're fun short, but it's a fan thing. None of us are making any money on it. We're just doing it because we love that property. And so it's fun.
Yeah, and it's fun to play in other franchises like that. I know Sean Taylor, I weighed in on some of his posts that he was discussing fan fiction and things like that. And it does offer a lot of positives and can be helpful to new writers as well for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right to get to play in the environment of something that you love. You yourself are a fan of. I mean, that's cool. I mean, that's a lot of fun.
And when you're doing fan fiction, you just do what you want. But, I mean, and that's cool. That's a good way to do it because it's characters you know. The big difference with doing a media tie-in, because people all the time are
tie-in.
Well, why
Correct.
Don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And I'm like, well, this is not fan fiction. I have a big list of do's and don'ts, And actually, with doing a media tie-in work, doing licensed work, there's more do's and don'ts than there are pitching something to a regular publisher. Because, with a publisher, like if I wrote something and submitted it to you guys, I would just have to impress you guys enough to go, we want this.
Right.
And if you had a licensed property, I would have to do that. Then after you guys go, we like this, then it has to go to the people that own it to approve it. They're not always necessarily going to be creative people making those decisions. And you can get kicked for any number of reasons. I mentioned Zorro earlier. There are two TV shows in production for Zorro. So stories could get kicked just because the TV show's already doing something similar to your story. So there's a lot of do's and don'ts. You can't make life-changing decisions for the characters. You can't cut off an arm. They can't have a child. They, you know, there. It's I always say that licensed media tie-in stuff is like Star Trek. The original series of Star Trek, almost every episode started with everybody on the bridge. The Enterprise is flying through space. Everybody's happy. Then some stuff happens. There's a problem. We have to solve it. At the end of the story, we're on the bridge. Everybody's happy, and we're flying through space. That's media tie-in writing. You get to play with them, but you can't break them. You have to.
Right.
You have to. At the end of the story, you have to give them back the way you found them, and that's a very important thing when it comes to writing tie-in stuff. Because you know, doing it a while, a lot of people try to pitch these big, epic things that they'll never sell because it's like, no, we can't have the character get married, have a child, someone come to take revenge, kill them all, both, and he has to get revenge, and that's like a major, everything suddenly becomes, that becomes like a fixed moment for that character. Everything is either before the marriage or after the marriage, before the kid or after the kid, you know. And so unless you are like the company has hired you to tell that story, you never pitch that story. So those are the kind of things you learn from doing media tie-in stuff is, you know, what you can and cannot conceivably pitch them. That'd be like you saying, we're gonna do an anthology for one of our characters. And, you know, you invite some writers in, and the first thing I decide to do is kill off one of the main characters. That's probably not going to sell. You know?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. It's like, in Star Trek, you can kill Spock, but he needs to be alive at the end of the episode. You know? So, there's a lot of that kind of stuff that you kind of have to learn when it comes to doing the tie-in stuff. So, but it's a fun challenge to learn.
Yeah, well, you've got it down because, I mean, in terms of recent releases and upcoming things, I mean, you're talking about projects involving the Lone Ranger, Zorro, as you mentioned, Green Hornet, Remo Williams. I mean, yeah, you got quite a bit on the table, both, recent and upcoming.
I love them, It's fun playing. It's fun playing with those characters, and so I'll do it as long as I can,
So go ahead and talk about... one of your recent ones, the Lone Ranger and Moonstone Double Shots. That's a recent one.
That came out in January. It's basically just a straight up Lone Ranger. It's technically, I guess, a short story. It's not a novel. It's a short story. The Moonstone Double Shots usually has two stories in one book. And so it's just a straight up Lone Ranger story. It's the Lone Ranger and Tonto ride into a town, and they're there in this town when some bad stuff goes down that they have to help solve. And but it's fun. It was fun to inhabit those characters. I watched a lot of Lone Ranger episodes to kind of get the voices back into my head, you know. Because I hadn't seen a Lone Ranger episode since I was a kid, I was writing a Lone Ranger story that could be simply another episode of the TV show, and that was kind of my how I approached it. And so I wrote a pitch, and you know, here's the bad guys, here's what they're trying to do, and they liked the pitch, and so I just went off The premise starts off with the Lone Ranger and Tonto arrive in this, I forget the name of the town, forgive me. They arrive in this small town just in time for the spring farmer's market. And then some bad stuff happens. So it's cool. It's really cool, fun writing those guys. And of course, the Lone Ranger and the Green Hornet are connected. You know, the Green Hornet is technically a Lone Ranger spinoff. And so, getting to write that family in two different time frames is fun, you know.
That is awesome.
The very first Green Hornet story I did, I made a mention of the connection, because we're not having crossovers, because obviously there's many years, many decades between them. But yeah, it was it's fun to kind of note the similarities between, you know, grandson and grandfather, how they, you know, how they both put on a mask and, you know, worked outside the wall, things like that.
And you got a little bit of that going on with Zorro too, and that has a similar time setting, the Lone Ranger. I mean, in terms of this setting overall, I guess. But I saw the upcoming is swordplay and romance. That's intriguing. The one coming up.
that's the new anthology. It's Bold Venture Press. They recently released the cover. Did a cover reveal. But yeah, because last year's was Zorro's exploits. And so for this one, I get the invite, and they were like, pitch something. It needs to have an element of romance to it. Was really the only outlier, was it had to have that. I'm like, okay. So I came up with a story, and I pitched. They liked. So I went off and wrote it, and it was a big fun. It was my second time writing Zorro. So that was fun. And, it's, again, it's that stuff I grew up watching, you know, people with secret identities and having to write the secret identity what silly stuff are they doing so people don't realize who they are, and, you know, and there's intrigue and there's always somebody plotting something, you know, in the old Zorro stories.
You would remember this too, Bobby. I love this story. I cannot remember. I'm having a brain fart. It was black and white. It was noir, big time noir, shadowed, you know. But it was black and white, and it had this figure, this bird. Remember this bird figure? And he wore like this long cloak, you know, this long like jacket. It was like mysterious, and they were always solving a mystery, you know. And I don't even think they had words. I think it was just music. I don't even think they had dialogue. Yeah. Do you remember what that was?
Not a clue.
What am I thinking of? I'm going to have to look it up now. When I figure it out, I will text you, because now it's going to drive me nuts, and I will figure it out, and you will know what I'm talking about. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
It is going to drive me crazy, because I love
that
when
that
it
was not ringing
home.
A bell. Yeah. You know, because I do know some of the obscure stuff, because I have gotten to it, because sometimes the license for an obscure thing is really easy to acquire. And so some of the smaller publishers I've worked with have done some, like, I did a story with, there was a show in the 80s called The Phoenix. I think it only lasted like six episodes. I did a story with him. I did a story with him meeting Kolchak, which was pretty cool. So I've got to play with that, or, you know, I've written some of the old-time radio show characters. I worked on a Box 13 once and Nightbeat. You know, some of the pulp characters not all the pulp characters are public domain. Some still are owned and licensed, but I got to write the Avenger a couple of times, the Spider. So those are fun. Yeah, so it's fun playing with those. You know, and some of them you know, some of them you don't. Like I had never read The Spider or The Avenger. You know, I'd read The Avenger. I'd never read The Spider before I wrote him. So I went and did a bunch of research. And so it's fun. And you learn, you know, new characters, or you get reacquainted. We adapted an Edgar Rice Burroughs novel, At the Earth Core, into a comic. And so I went back and was rereading the old Burroughs Pellucidar stories and, you know, just to get back into that mindset of that world and the voice and how Burroughs wrote and how his characters talk. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that with when it comes to doing that. There's a lot more research, you know, unlike where I write one of my characters that I created, I just make stuff up, you know. He needs to have a long-lost cousin. No problem. You know, it's hard to do that with the license stuff. You need to make sure you fit, because those things come with built-in fan bases, and they will tell you if you are wrong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Fandom is fierce. But I was curious to hear.
You wanted,
your, Go ahead.
I was just saying, but yeah, you also, but you wanna try to be as, it's of two minds. You wanna be as close to what came before, but if you don't give them, you have to give them something newer. Then it's just like, oh, you're just retreading. So yeah, it's definitely a tightrope kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I was going to ask you, though, now the shift on the type of character, but you're going to laugh, but the first time I encountered Remo Williams when I was a kid, when the movie The Adventure Begins, with starring Fred Ward, came out, that's the first time I encountered Remo Williams. I as a kid, I enjoyed it and liked it, even though the movie wasn't all that successful as a box office. But yeah, I'm curious to hear about that project and what your thoughts are about that character, because that's a little bit, that brings me a little bit of a blast from the past kind of feel.
Yeah. Well, that was where I first met Remo Williams as well, was the movie. And I love the movie. I thought that, you know, you're right. If
Me
I
too.
Look at it with a critical eye, you know, I can pick it apart. But there's a – I love the adventure of it. I'm a big adventure action writer. I love those type of things. And, you know – that fight scene on the Statue of Liberty is pretty darn cool.
Yes.
To this day, it's pretty darn cool.
Yes, it was.
I am just, on a personal note, I'm a big fan of, like, stories that take place in the wilderness. So that whole ending thing where they're out there, and, you know, the logs are being moved with the logging camp and all, you know, I'm totally into it. I love Fred Ward. I think Fred Ward is fantastic. A lot of good folks in there. Joel Grey and Kate Mulgrew is in there. Wilford Brimley. I mean, there's a lot of really cool people in it. So yeah, so it was fun. Then later, actually, the second time I discovered Remo, Marvel Comics did a Remo Williams the Destroyer comic miniseries. And so I read that, and then I found out, wait, there's books, and so I went and tracked down some novels, and There are differences, obviously. The novels are more, they're very pulp novels, but they're more adult. You know, in the movie we see, I mean, obviously they're assassins, they kill people and all this. In the books, Remo and Chun are not quite as nice as they are in the movie. You know, they can be downright, like, brutal. But as a writer, writing that was major fun, you know. So they're just great characters, and those three characters of, you know, Harold Smith, who's their boss, and then Remo and Chun, you know, the scenes with them interacting with each other or playing off of each other are just fun. These are three very different characters, and they're all smart asses. So that's always fun to write. And so, yeah, so I had a blast. And so I come up with the answer is going to get boring after a while, but it's like they asked, I pitched them something, they liked it, and then I just kind of started writing.
That's how you do it.
I was reading while I was writing. Yeah, I was reading to get their voices. I was reading some of the novels while I was writing to kind of get their mannerisms and voices back in my head, because my default setting is still that movie, you know. So in my head, the characters still sound like. So even though I'm writing like the book, he still talks like Fred Ward. No, fun stuff. I mean, they're very action heavy. You know, a lot of smart alecky comments, which I love writing. And again, it's that pulpy kind of, you know. You just get to a point where it's like, oh, okay, what can we do? Because in a pulpy kind of story, you can just throw stuff and see what works. And you can do weird stuff like, oh, I've written myself into a corner. Great, let's blow something up. You know, that kind of, it's fun. I love that kind of, that irreverent kind of pulpy, noirish, you know, action adventure kind of thing. That's my bread and butter. I could write that stuff all day long, every day. And I do, mostly.
Yeah. Absolutely. But, I mean, you do write a lot of different stuff. I mean, and I'm going to bring this up because it's just an interesting thing. Absolutely. And it's your Crimes in Time, a six-book educational graphic novel series. That shifts gears. That's definitely something different. Yeah.
I love writing comics. That was how I started, was writing comics. I love writing comics. I will write comics any chance I get. Chance as often as I would like. It's weird. It comes and goes. Like, I went for like 5 or 6 years where I didn't write any comics. And in the last 2 years, I've written 20. So,
nice.
But Crimes in Time, it was referred to me by someone else who, Glasshouse Graphics puts together art teams and stuff for publishers. And I've known David, who runs that, for a few years. And he said, well, if I ever see anything that needs a writer, I'll keep you in mind. And so this project came in, and the writer who I guess would normally be their on-call writer wasn't available or whatever, for whatever reason. Somebody couldn't do it. And so the pitch was, we want crime stories set during these six historical events. It was a six-book series, so each book was that historical event. And David was like, wait, I know a guy that writes crime stuff. And so, he got me in contact with them, and so they told me what they wanted to do. And so then I pitched. They gave me the historical events, the Great Chicago Fire of 1871, the sinking of the Titanic, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, Mount St. Helens erupting, the New York blackout of 1977, and Hurricane Katrina. Those were the six events.
Wow.
So that part was locked in. So I created characters and came up with a crime story for each one of them, pitched, sent all that in, and they liked them and approved them. But they're aimed at 10 years old and up, probably, maybe 8 and up. And so you certainly, there's certain things you can't do that you might do in a crime novel. But, and I saw the artist the artist work, so I knew what the artist's style was, which is more of a playful, open, kind of cartoony style. So it's not gonna. So I know we're not gonna be gritty, and so I had to do a bunch of research because not only did I have to write the crime story, the details had to be right, and it couldn't just be we're telling this story and oh yeah, this is happening over here. They had to be interconnected in some way, and so. But then I also had to do. There's 3 pages of like true facts that had to be in there about the actual event. So I had to write that part too. And so, I pitched them six different stories. And I made sure not to do the same crime 6 times. It's 6 very individual crimes. And so pitched it. They liked it. I went and wrote the script. They liked it. And we did some adjustments and edits and whatnot where we could, because there were in the process of it some things where it's like, you can use guns. Then it's like, we've been told not to use guns. Okay. They can't fight. Okay, let's not show them any blood. So there was some of that. Mm-hmm. But we got these stories down, and the artist, I think, did a fantastic job on them. It is an educational publisher, so their books are primarily sold to libraries.
Yeah.
And so so it's really cool to have stuff in libraries. So I've been also talking with a lot of libraries about coming and doing events, during the summer where I can talk about the books and I have a presentation about here's how comics are made. And so I've been doing some of those and showing off the books and then getting libraries to stock the books so kids can check them out. And I mean, you can buy them too, but because they are, library-specific books, especially for children, are designed differently than regular books. So they cost more because they have to survive being manhandled constantly by different
readers. Right.
The pages have to be different.
The covers have to be different. That's what we started doing books. Steve's like, well, you're the expert on children's books, so you know. And I said, yeah, because I said those little hands. Said the page has got to be harder to tear. You know, it's got to be. They got to be colorful. They got to. Yeah, it's a little different. You got to think.
The spine has to be printed a certain way so that pages won't come out. Because some kids are going to open the spine all the way up, and so they're made differently, you know. But they're beautiful little books. I have them here. There's six of them. They're beautiful books. I am thrilled with them. They're all hardback, you know. And so it was fun. So I wrote this, and I did each book. Really, there's nothing holding them together except the title. So I decided from a creative standpoint, just so people would know it was all part of the series, we use newspapers to set the scenes. Like it opens up with a newspaper article talking about where we are and what's going on. And we get little snippets of newspaper through it. Now, when we get to Hurricane Katrina, which is the only one, you know, in the 21st century, we still have the newspaper. We're also getting the news a lot on like tablets and things like that. But the publisher noticed what I was doing. And so they used that on the back covers of all of them. The back covers all look like a newspaper headline.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So they did a beautiful job and the books are gorgeous. And so I'm thrilled. And so I figure by the time all is said and done, these will probably be the most read things I've ever done.
Nice. That's
Bobby,
cool. That's cool.
That's my guess.
Except Holly, I got to tell you this real quick, though. He probably had to shelve on the Chicago 1871 story. He probably had to shelve his H.H. Holmes story idea. This is for kids.
What really surprised me, is that they mentioned the Son of Sam in their thing when they gave me the historical event. And I'm like,
wow,
really?
Wow.
And so not only do we talk about the Son of Sam, he makes an appearance in the book.
Oh, well, I stand corrected. Maybe could have had H.H. Holmes.
Yeah. We don't see him
I know
kill anybody. Yeah, but
I know his great grandson. I'm just saying, I know a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
So he actually does show up in the book.
I'll say I'm friends with him,
now,
so you know.
Yeah. So we don't see him. We don't see him commit the crimes, but it is mentioned that obviously that's a big boiling point because when the blackout happened, he was such a polarizing figure and on everybody's mind that he gets blamed for the blackout.
Yeah.
Which is true. It was attributed to everything that went wrong in New York that year was attributed to him.
Oh, I know.
If you stub your toe, you know.
World's Fair, everything. Yep.
Yeah. And so he actually, we see him in the book, and our main characters, they're trying to get out of New York when the riot starts. And they have a car crash, and this good Samaritan helps them out. And it's him. And then, at the end of the book, spoilers, at the end of the book, they see on TV that he's been arrested, and they realize, holy crap, look who we came face to face with. But throughout the book, he's just walking around, taking it all in, watching these riots as the city burns, and he's starting to believe his own press. He's going, wow, look at what I've done, you know. Because everybody's accusing him of it, and so they wanted him in as part of the story. So I found a way to work it in.
That
is cool.
I'm about to check that out. You know what, Bobby?
Yeah.
I'm going to check that out and get you to sign me a copy, and I will actually send it to his great great grandson as a gift.
Oh, awesome.
He will actually love it, Bobby. He will show it on his page, and I mean, he will love it. He really will.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Yeah. Because we didn't shy away from things because the sinking of the Titanic, people died in that. The bombing of Pearl Harbor, people died in that. And we don't shy away from it. We just aren't graphically showing it, you know. We're seeing the ships on fire.
Right.
You didn't do the John Belushi version where the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor, I'm sure, though.
No. I had an editor that made sure my facts were right. Yeah, my facts had to be right.
Right. I love that. For Animal House.
The only place we really had any discrepancies was with Katrina, because there's a lot of conflicting data about when things happened, and so we had to do
Yeah. My brother lived in Gulfport, Mississippi, when that sucker hit, and he stayed like an idiot because that's where the eyeball hit, was Gulfport. And I told him, I said, "You're an idiot. You need to get your ass home." He stayed. We didn't hear from him for 3 freaking days. We thought he was dead. But, no, he actually had to take a chainsaw and saw his way out because these roads, you know, to civilization were covered in trees, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So he actually had to saw his way out. And when he stayed up, he got up here then, finally, and he stayed up here for a few days, and then he went back, and FEMA then was there and gave him all kinds of stuff, blankets and water and, you know, all kinds of stuff. They set him up. But, yeah, it was a mess. And then it was years later, I went to New Orleans. You wouldn't have believed the damn mess that still existed in New Orleans. It's sad. It's sad that, you know, it hadn't been cleaned up in a lot of areas. I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
The X's were still spray painted on houses. I mean,
it was a mess.
I can tell you a lot of stories about Katrina. Yeah.
And so part of it was making sure too that we still had to tell the crime story, but all that other stuff had to be, you know, we didn't shy away. It's there, you know, and so it wasn't just as a backdrop. It had to be either the characters were impacted by it or were active participants or, you know, different things like that. So coming up with a crime, you know, to get people on the Titanic, you know, for example. But when the Titanic set sail, before it headed toward the U.S., they made one stopover for 2 hours to take on some passengers and cargo in this tiny little town. So I have the guys rob the local bank and use the Titanic as their getaway vehicle, you know, which in hindsight, not a great plan. But, you know, I had the benefit of hindsight. They didn't. So writing stuff like that, you know, so we get to plan. I planned a jailbreak or a jail heist and, you know, the robbery. And then, of course, you know, the guys are turning on each other and double-crossing each other. And, yeah, so it was fun. It was fun to play with all that. It was fun that we do like a little walking tour of the Titanic when we first get on there, you know. We're following him through the various, you know, to get so that the readers can get a sense of what the Titanic looks like. And
absolutely.
Because this is a question I got asked a lot, you know, because you can't just tell people to watch the movie, because I got that a lot. Did you watch the movie for reference? No. The movie, for all the true stuff that's in the movie, they're doing the same thing I am. They're doing fiction, you know, based on something real. So I had to look at the real stuff. But I figure most people know what the Titanic looks like because of the movie. But, you know, yeah, I still couldn't just say, oh, you see the movie.
You can still bump into the unsinkable Molly Brown, though. She definitely existed.
Yep.
Was aboard.
Yep.
She's a fun character.
I definitely play the unsinkable Molly Brown.
Holly's your actress.
I am your actress for Molly Brown. 100%.
Yeah, she could. Yeah, we studied Molly Brown and saw a lot of Holly commonalities with her. Yeah, definitely could.
That'd be easy.
Yeah. Fun fact, I have a Titanic connection. The Carpathia, the ship that came, responded to the distress signal of the Titanic, that is the vessel that brought my father's side of the family over from Europe when they immigrated to America way back when. It was not the same voyage, not the same voyage as that one, but it was the same vessel, same ship. That's kind of a cool nugget
cool.
for you.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
Yeah. And doing these things, you know, I learned a lot, you know, because, you know, I didn't know some, you know, I've not studied all of these particular things in the past. So, like, the big one for me was I had always wondered about the Great Fire in Chicago, how a fire could destroy a whole city. But I didn't realize until I was researching it that even the streets in Chicago in 1871 were made out of wood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because it's all
the burn.
It was
field of the fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
the mud.
There was so muddy there that they just built on top of the mud something that would float on the mud. And then throughout the city, there are just stacks of lumber. So if a piece breaks, they just grab another piece and fix it. So it was like one giant tinder box.
Mm-hmm.
And but all that stuff was fascinating. I had a blast. Plus, I, you know, not only researching the real thing, but researching the crime. Like in that one, we're following a pickpocket and petty criminal. And so he's trying to get up money for the big poker game because, you know, the fire starts in the barn where poker game's happening. He's trying to get up money for the poker game. And so we're following him around committing petty crimes. So I had to study how to do those crimes, you know, to effectively right for the artist, here's how you pickpocket, you know, so the artist can draw it realistically, and I can explain it realistically. So, yeah, so I'm teaching a bunch of 10-year-olds how to pickpocket.
There you go.
How to run a crisp and run a con. You know, I'm going to be their favorite author forever. Yes, I'm going to be their favorite author forever.
Someday.
Just keeps on giving.
Yeah. Someday, ones are going to come up and just hand you a large check and just say, thank you for helping me with my skills development.
Here, how'd you get do I want to know how you made this money?
Yeah,
so
no,
you do
no
not.
Questions.
Okay.
No.
But, you know, writing, because I do write a lot of crime fiction and thrillers and, you know, I study a lot of things like that. You know, I've done research can be fun. Writing crime fiction. I spent a day with the FBI. I spent a day hanging out with a Secret Service agent. I've met SWAT team guys and just people that do those jobs that are connected to what I write. And so I've learned a lot. I got to watch these guys and it's fascinating. And there's still more. I had other visitations that were set up before COVID, you know, shut everything down. Because I was supposed to go spend the day with the medical examiner. And then that, of course, you know, that got put on kind of an indefinite hold. So, you know, but hopefully we'll get back to that. But I've got to spend time, you know, with people that do the certain jobs, you know, and people love talking about their jobs. So that's fun. I've got a list of things for, like, upcoming story ideas with notes that say, go talk to such and such about this. So there's just a lot of that. I learned so much. I probably know more about murder than I should. I saw that. Remember that TV show where Nathan Fillion played the writer and he's working with the cops and there's a scene in one where the suspect, they think he's a psychopath, and he goes, well, he subscribes to all of these magazines, and he does this. And he's looking at it and goes, wait, I subscribe to all these. And they're like, yeah, but you're not a psychopath. You're a writer. And I'm thinking, there's not a lot of difference in some
There's a line. Oh, yeah. My God. That's great.
We're like psychopaths without the hands-on experience, you know?
Right.
Because we have to put ourselves in the headspace of people that do those things. And the trick is that you got to be able to get yourself out of that headspace. But, research can be fun. Like I said, I've talked to a lot of people with some very cool, very interesting, sometimes very gruesome jobs. But you learn a lot, you know. And I get ideas from things. Like I remember joking with my mother when she was doing chemo. This is several years ago. I was like, you know what? We spend so much time in these hospitals. I'm going to have to write a medical thriller one of these days. I haven't done it yet, but the idea is still there, you know.
If you do, give me a shout. You know, I worked as a nurse for decades, so I got it down.
So,
and I've had to take care of a lot of dying people and bodies and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and so you see that stuff, and those, it sparks ideas, or I see things on the news, and I go, or I'll see like two different things, and go, in my story, those are part of the same crime. In real life, they're probably not, but in my story, yes. If we put this together with this, there's a lot of that that goes on, and. Yeah, so my brother used to tell people that I murdered people for a living. And then he wouldn't elaborate.
That's great.
And I had a young cousin. She was like 11 or 12 at the time. And I noticed she stopped coming around me, and I couldn't figure out why. And that's because he told her that. And I had to explain to her. Like, then I explained to her, no, in books, I write about these things. And he goes, And then my brother goes, but he researches it for real. So Lord knows how many people he's told that, you know, over the years that I murder people for a living.
Yeah, for a living. Hitman.
Awesome.
Yeah, professional hitman. There you go.
That's awesome.
Believe me, my bank account would look a lot better.
Pays much better.
I mean,
that's true.
What got you into like true crime and stuff, or like thrillers or mysteries, or you know, what got you into that? I mean, did it start in childhood? Did it start when you were young?
I think so. I used to love watching like mystery. Like you would watch a lot of shows. You know, growing up in the '70s, the Rockford Files and. You know, mystery characters, Heart to Heart, and all those other guys were even the $6 Million Man and the Hulk were solving mysteries all the time. So, and Scooby-Doo, Scooby-Doo probably played a big part in my love of mysteries as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure,
so,
it just
kind of started there. And then as I grew older, I got to. You know, I started reading them. I think probably the first mystery book I ever read was an Encyclopedia Brown. And that kind of was like, ooh, you know. And then just as I got older, it just continued. But probably it started with TV because, you know, I grew up loving things like I said, Rockford or Magnum P.I. or things like that. There was a mystery. Even though there was all that action stuff, there was still a mystery. And I became kind of infatuated with the idea of finding the clues.
Playing clues.
For anybody
the old clue game.
Right. And so
I have.
But as a writer, finding the way to work the clues in and not be obvious is not easy.
But
it's tough. Because to me, I know it's a clue. Yeah, because I know it's a clue. In my head, there's this bright neon sign pointing at it going, this is a clue. But I'm then surprised when the readers don't catch that was a clue. Then I feel better about myself. Even if you play loose, like I don't do detailed plots. I have loose plots. I still have to know the clues because it as a reader, it irritates me to no end when the one clue that helps them catch the bad guy is a clue that's not in the book or a clue that's not in the TV show. It's a clue I see. And I'm like, you know, and I get upset because I was not given the opportunity to figure it out because that one clue was held back.
Yeah.
And so I make it a point in my books that those clues have to be there. And so now sometimes you'll get near the end and you'll have something happen and you go, ooh, I forgot to make a clue for that. And then you'll go back and find a place to put it. But
that's it.
I want my readers, I want to play fair with my readers. I want them to get to the end, and when it's revealed who the bad guy is or whatever mystery we're solving, and we point out how we figured it out, I want them to go, aha, you know, that's what that meant. I don't want them to go, well, damn, you didn't put that in the book. So
yeah,
I want
sense,
them.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I want them to figure it out when we do. I want them to, you know, I want them to be guessing and talking and, you know.
Well, that's it.
Like,
the beauty of it is you don't want to give too much of it away because we want to keep guessing, try to figure it out and find our clues. Have you ever watched the show Only Murders in the Building on Hulu?
Oh, I love that. Oh, it's so good.
Oh, my God. This last season, oh, my God. Me and Beck watched this, and we were like, we know their pattern now. We got this solved. We know who did it. By God, we didn't. We got to the end. We're like, oh, God. And then, you see that. You know, when they go back, you're like, that makes sense.
If you like this kind of stuff, on Hulu, there's a show called Death and Other Deals. It's one season. It's 10 episodes, I think. It's Mandy Patinkin and Violet Bean, and they're on an ocean or like a cruise ship, and there's a murder. Oh, it's full of red herrings, and you know, my buddy Mike and I, like, we would get together, it would air on Monday nights, and we would get together on Tuesday and go, who do you think it is? Because we thought
it was
this guy last week, and now we know it's not. And
that's Only Murders in the Building, right?
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Death and Other Deals it's very much in the vein of like an Agatha Christie or Knives Out, that kind of, it's that feel. And Mandy Patinkin is just incredible anyway. And, I highly recommend that one if you're into a good mystery. I grew up, you know, once I got into school age, you know, I discovered Sherlock Holmes. You know, guys like, you know, things like that, you know, some Agatha Christie, so learning those mystery tropes. And then as I got older, you know, Michael Connelly and Alex Cava or James Patterson or Stephen J. Canal was writing mystery novels. And so as I got older, I was like, ooh, there are people. And so it just, when it came time to write, well, my first attempt at a novel was a science fiction novel, and it was horrible. But my second attempt turned out to be Evil Ways, which very much was a suspense thriller with a lot of mystery in it. Because I don't tell you who the killer is. We see the killer doing things, but he's always referred to – actually, I spoiled something there. I said he. Like, I don't even say he or she. It's just the killer did this. You know,
right.
The killer is doing – you know. And so you, as the reader, doesn't – get the actually the reader the hero, the cop, figures it out a chapter before I tell the reader who it is. You know, it's like they figure it out and say, I know who did it, let's go. And but I want people to, I also think playing fair that way with the mystery helps you get repeat readers, because after you've seen something, after you figured it out, if you go back and read it again, it means something different. Because I try to make my clues, you know, I sometimes try to make clues that can mean one thing or another. If you know they're the killer, it means this. If they're not the killer, it means this, but it's the same, you know. So you can kind of get people to go and reread the book, which is awesome. And hopefully we'll come back for the next book.
Right.
So yeah, because when I did with the Sheriff Meyer stuff, those tend to be more mystery based. There's something going on. Mm. Who killed? You know, who did this? Who did that? And I just finished up book three. It's about to go into
Standing in the Shadows.
And it
yes,
Standing in the Shadows, and that one's about them discovering new evidence that opens up a 20-year-old cold case, but has implications for stuff going on around them now. So that was fun, playing with the different clues and making sure this clue makes sense. And then get to later and you go, oh, crap, you played a clue. You should probably use it somewhere. Or, you know, that's where editing is very important on a mystery.
Yes.
Because you want to make sure you don't want your reader to be well, it's okay if they get confused, but you don't want them to be confused to where you can't explain it to them if they ask.
And it don't make sense.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
because
right.
I'm
like that. I didn't even see that. That don't even make sense.
Yeah.
You didn't explain that, you know? Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah. Cause I've had some people come up to me after, especially after Evil Ways, which was my first, and coming up and going, okay, I may have missed something. Because also with a mystery, you are misdirecting the readers as well. You know,
right.
I want you to think it's this guy, or I want you to think this, you know, I don't want you to just think one person. I want to give you multiple options. But so I have had people especially people I know, will come up and go, okay, I missed something, or explain to me how this happened. You know,
right.
So it's like, and then I can tell them and say, well, you remember when this happened? And they're like, oh, I totally missed that. You know, those are great conversations to have. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah, so writing the mystery, I love that, and I love doing it to me too to make sure I understand the mystery.
Right.
Because if I'm confused,
yeah,
then we're all confused. Yeah,
we're all going to be confused.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But that hasn't happened before. I wrote a short story for a thing once. We were doing an old radio show called Nightbeat, and the premise of the show was that in Chicago, this reporter, he would get out and walk the streets of Chicago every night. He would get into some kind of trouble, and that was his story he wrote about. And so I had him run across an old girlfriend who had married a mobster, and she has a child, and she's trying to escape. She's a singer. She's run to Chicago. They're trying to escape her sister, and the baby. But the bad guy, the mobster, is after them. It's a pretty straightforward story. The mobster is the bad guy. Blah, 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 blah. We get up near the end of the story. The hero and the mobster finally are face-to-face for the first time. And he's going to protect his friend and help her. And I start writing the dialogue between these two. And the dialogue that comes out of the mobster's mouth makes me go, well, crap, he's not the bad guy.
Which
at that
the real
bad guy spoke up.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, ooh, that is a great, oh, I love that. That gives the ending much more pop. It's great. Okay, I finished writing it. Let me go plant some clues. This twist doesn't come out of thin air. So I go back and reread it. To my surprise, the clues are already there. My subconscious and the character were ahead of me. Yeah, the character was ahead of me.
Took a life of their own, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I love those moments. That's, you know, and that's part of the reason I don't do, like, full outlines. I feel constrained.
I do very loose plot.
I know these things have to happen. So it's like, okay, there's 10 plot points we have to hit in this novel. These 10 signposts we've got to do too. Okay, character. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, Sheriff Myers, I need you to take me to plot point number one. How do we get there? And then I let the character figure out how to get me there. And that allows me those discovery moments.
Yeah.
Because, you know, not every character approaches problems the same way.
Very similar to how I approach things, too. Yeah, I like that.
Because
you room to breathe.
Right, yeah, it gives you room to discover stuff. You can sometimes come up with a twist that you didn't see coming. Because until that book is done and ready to go to print, you can change anything you want, you know.
Yeah, I
meet a lot of writers that think once they've moved on from chapter one, they can't touch it. I'm like, no, if you get to chapter five and you need to fix something in chapter one, go back and fix it.
Absolutely.
Don't get stuck. That's like writing yourself into a corner. What's your advice? Well, both of you actually can answer that. What's your advice on if somebody gets stuck, because I do it to myself all the time, writing yourself into a corner, and then you're like, where am I going to go from here? You know.
I always tell people, because I get the writer's block question a lot, and I don't think I don't think most people understand writer's block, because I have had people ask the question you just asked and assume that's writer's block, and that's not. You've written yourself into a corner.
Right, there's the difference.
Yeah, right, you haven't forgotten how to write. You're just either stuck on the next plot point, or you just you just reached the end of your creativity for that story for that day. That's why I work on multiple things at one time, because if I get to this point and I stop, I can either quit for the day or I can jump to another story. Because you reach a certain point and your brain goes, that's all I want to think about evil ways today.
I'm done.
But I always tell people, if you're stuck, if you can't figure out a problem, you've probably either written yourself into a corner or something about what you've written is not quite right. And you may not see it, but there's something there. Your brain is going, something's wrong. Something's not right. And the more you focus on trying to figure it out, it's like running in quicksand. You know, the more you focus on it, the more you're going to sink. So I always tell people, okay, if you're at that point and you can't do anything, I mean, you're just stuck. It's driving you crazy. Get up from the computer. Take a walk around the block. Go mow your lawn. Go do your dishes. Go do your laundry. Go fold some clothes. Go do something that doesn't require intense focus. So that the back of your brain is working the problem. Take a drive. Go walk around the park. Things like that. I have broken more story blocks cutting the grass than anything else. Because you can mow the lawn, and yeah, I mean, you're paying attention to what you're doing, but it doesn't require active, right. It doesn't require
intense thought. You're working out the problem. Right.
Right. Yeah. So the back of your brain is thinking it through because you've loosened up. You're not focused on it. You know, and so your brain will work the problem, and then you'll have that light bulb, aha, moment where you'll figure it out. Sometimes that means, oh, I know what to write next to get them out of that corner. And sometimes it's, okay, that chapter's got to go.
You know,
which we all hate. None of us like cutting. You know, you guys know, none of us likes cutting chapters, but it happens sometimes. And, so that's what I do. It's get away, going on drives with my dad's great. Because he laughs, because we'll be riding down the road and I'm just sitting there, and then all of a sudden I whip out my phone and I start like drastically typing, and he's like, got an idea? And then I email it to myself and I'm good to go. But so you never know when those, that's why we get so many ideas, I think, when we're in bed or in the shower. Or
laying there thinking,
because you're not trying to force it. Like part of my day, you know, I work here in my office, and as I mentioned, my bedroom is across the hall. So I will sometimes, because you know, you said that we need to get up out of the desk chair ever so often and stretch, and I'll get up and go walk around. But I'll go lay in bed and kind of stretch out in the bed, not going to sleep, not napping. I'll just kind of lay there. You know, for a little bit, take some deep breaths, just get comfortable. And my brain is suddenly going through the next step of what I need to write. And so after 15 minutes, I get up and I come in here and write what I just thought about. So, sometimes allowing
it's
your brain.
Stepping away, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you allow the brain to work on its own schedule, and that
right.
usually does it for me, stepping away and trying something else.
Well, thank you. That's some good advice. Stephen, what do you think? Stephen just goes in and writes for hours every day, and I just
mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I've been trying to write my children's books now that's in my head for years. I don't,
mm-hmm.
He goes in there, writes for hours. I mean, it just spews out. I don't understand it, but, I mean,
well,
if you write
those,
yourself,
I have those days too,
what do you
yeah.
do?
Are you still asking Bobby?
No,
no,
I'm talking about you. What do you do if you write yourself
about me.
In the corner?
It's not too different. I mean, I shift gears. I do, like, if I'm working on an ensemble piece and I go to another thread or another section of that story and keep chugging, and then I'll come back to that later. Or if I feel like I've really kind of quagmired a little bit, I'll backtrack and try to see, you know, okay, what led up to the block, you know, or where I feel like, well, not block, I should say, where I've written in my kind of like a corner of some kind. I'll backtrack
right.
just a little bit and see what kind of got me into that mess. I'll look at it that way. But
right.
Bobby's absolutely right. I think one of the key things is sometimes you just got to take a breath of fresh air, just walk away and just let your mind kind
uh-huh.
of settle and clear. And because I like Bobby, you know, I get some of my best thinking when I'm kind of just away from everything and not putting like an active focus on it. So it's, yeah, so I think everything he said is absolutely spot on. Yeah, very, very similar.
Yeah, and I also think that, I mean, do you guys work on just one thing at a time, or do you have multiple things going, or in different stages, or?
Yeah, I work, but usually, like, when I do one session, I'll just work on that particular book, and then I might do another writing session in the day where I'll work on a short story or something like that.
Gotcha.
So I will break
right.
it up that way.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to, for me at least, just for me, and like I said, all writers are different. It's hard for me to shift gears to a different world and characters with in the same session that I'm sitting in front of the computer. It's hard for me just
yeah.
to switch my
yeah.
brain out
yeah.
just because
yeah,
just the way my brain just the way I immerse into it. It's just hard
right.
for me to do that. So mm-hmm.
well, I find
so,
it because I'm always because I have multiple things open, and
yeah.
if I'm writing a crime novel, and I get to that point where I'm just like, what happens next, or I'm stuck, or I don't know, I can jump over and work on a comic script. Because it's
sure,
a different,
can,
it's
oh,
a different
see, yeah.
type of writing. Because yeah,
I can
it's
see exactly how it works.
Type of writing, and so mm-hmm. I can go do that. And while I'm doing that, same thing, my brain is working that problem because I'm using different creative muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And so that works.
Oh,
a lot,
absolutely.
Doing, you know, bouncing between, yeah. and it doesn't even have to be writing. I mean, for those of us who writing is a job, there's all of the admin work that has to happen. Which is important,
right.
but it's not part of your writing, you know. It's,
no,
but like,
yeah.
you know. But if I ever get to that point, I can go. It's like, you know what? I got a press release I need to write. I can go do that because, you know, it's a different type of writing, and
sure.
so I can do
absolutely.
Stuff like that to keep me busy. Because someone told me this once, and I don't remember where I heard it or what made me think of it, but one of the things that helps me stay focused is I realized that if I wanted writing to be my job, I had to treat
mm-hmm.
it like my job. Because I
mm-hmm.
didn't do that always. It was one of those, I don't feel like writing today, so I don't write anything. You know, if I
mm-hmm.
went, because if I only wait to write when I'm writing, I would never get anything done. So,
oh, yeah.
But
I
once
understand.
I get started, yeah, once I get myself
mm-hmm.
in the office, in the chair, sit down, and start, I'm okay. But if I'm waiting for my brain to go, hey, let's go write, you know, I will never get anything done because my brain is going, hey, let's go screw around over here. You know, that's
right.
how my brain works.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, write or watch TV.
Yeah.
You know.
That's
so,
funny.
Yeah, so,
yeah, that's true.
So there had to be some, I had to come up with that discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps me. Not everybody, I get it. Not everybody works that way, but for me, and
mm-hmm.
I don't do like I got to be in the office at 10 a.m. to, you know, because with my dad, that kind of scheduling is impossible. But
mm-hmm.
I do say every day there has to be so many hours to put down in the office. Now, you take days mm-hmm. off. It's like, I'm not saying you have to work 7 days a week, 365
right.
days a year.
Yeah,
but,
you need to, yeah.
You know what? Yeah, next Saturday, me and some buddies are going out to dinner, and we're going to go to the movies. Great, I'm taking Saturday off. That just means mm-hmm. I'm going to work a little extra Friday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you can do
exactly.
that.
Uh-huh.
But you have to, you can't just set, if you want it to be a job. Now, there are people that write as a hobby, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting till you're in the mood is fine. I have deadlines. You have deadlines. I
mm-hmm.
have to meet those deadlines. My deadlines and my publishers who set those deadlines don't care whether I feel like writing or not. What they care about
mm-hmm.
is I finish this story by that deadline. And
right.
it's good,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, finishing by that deadline is very important. And so you have to learn to push past those type of things. That's why I tell people I don't believe in writer's block, because I don't forget how to write, you know. I know how to write.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I can't, you know, I mean, you see the amount of output I do. If I can't
mm-hmm.
go, I don't know how to write. And again, we're probably one of the few careers that has this type of thing. The creative
mm-hmm.
fields tend to be the ones that focus on these, you know. Singers do it, actors do it, artists do it, writers do it. But you get out in the real world, doctors don't have doctor's block. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you're a brain surgeon, you can't go, you know, I don't feel like doing brain surgery today.
Right.
So we have to train ourselves. It can be a learned skill.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're Agreed. Doing stuff on your own, if you don't have a publisher, or if you're trying to finish something, give yourself a deadline. Learn to meet those deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be flexible. Or, you know, because I always, and you probably hear it too, it's like, I can't find time to write. And it's like, well, all right, you know, it's like you're never going to find time to write.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be like you and I, you know, we're talking about, we'll sit for hours at a time writing. Well, not everybody
right.
has that luxury. But you know what?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked a full-time job and a part-time job while I was writing my first novel, I wrote on my – I had a 30-minute lunch break. I took a sandwich and a drink every day. I sat out in my car with – it started out with pen and paper. Then I got a laptop. Then I got a tablet. So for 30 minutes, I sat in my car eating my bologna sandwich and typing away. That's
uh-huh.
how I made the time to get the work done. So there are ways to do it if you want to do it.
Right.
It's
yes,
not always easy,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you guys, you know, I know you know this. You sometimes have to give stuff up. You know, you have to sacrifice
mm-hmm.
to do. It's like,
yep.
you know, I want to do this fun thing, but I also need to get this book done. And it's like, which is it? Or
mm-hmm.
probably the one we all know. I need to sleep, but I need to get this done.
Yeah.
I think anybody that's ever written to a deadline knows that feeling. You know?
Yes.
I have to sleep.
Good.
This book is due tomorrow, mm-hmm. and I, So, you know, but that's part of the, you know, we have to learn. Now, the trick is we get, hopefully we learn and we don't fall into that, oh my God, I'm right on deadline again. You know, we try to,
mm-hmm.
you know, I try to stay a little ahead of deadlines. I don't
right.
always succeed.
Yeah, that's the key.
Sometimes I push it right
mm-hmm.
to the limit.
Yeah, I like that, you know.
Yeah, but I try
mm-hmm.
not to do everything pushing it right to the limit. Although,
yeah.
on those days where I am pushing it to the limit, I am the most productive on those days because it's like,
yeah,
I've got to write 5,000 words
yep,
today.
Under,
okay.
Under
I'm,
the gun.
Know,
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
By hook or by crook, I'm going to make it. And,
that's
you know,
awesome.
So, but the stress
yeah.
of
right.
that gets you. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But still, at the end of the day, no matter how much that was, and I don't mean that to sound like I was complaining, but at the end of the day, I still have one of the greatest jobs in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I wrote, I before we were on, before I got on with you guys, I was writing about a robot murdering people on a space station.
You know? Nice.
That's cool. You know, that is, how much fun is that, you know?
So I love what I do.
And so I don't, you know, I enjoy it. Like I said, it's work. I mean, it's work, but it's work I like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's right. Work you enjoy. Yeah. Well, Bobby, as we go down the
stay in your life. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
As we go down the stretch run here, I do want to make sure, I'd be remiss if we did not mention a very popular series of original stuff that you have, original characters you have. You have recently a new Snow novel, Snow Hunt. Number 7
oh, yeah,
in the series.
Yeah.
I want to make sure before we wrap up, I want to make sure we give that one a definite spotlight because that series is a really good one. And go ahead and
thank you.
Us a little bit about that one before we finish.
Yeah. Snow Book 7, Snow Hunt is the, because Books 1 through 6 were kind of like Season 1. You know, it's one mm-hmm. big story, but it's broken up into 6 parts, and so mm-hmm. Snow Hunt. Yeah, technically, I guess, the start of Season 2. And it's a standalone story where Snow is approached by a former commanding officer of his. Because before Snow went undercover and went to work for the government doing undercover secret agent-y type stuff, he was in the Army. And so they sent him around training. And so he spent some time working with Colonel Hunt. That's where the Hunt part of Snow Hunt comes in. To learn how to dismantle bombs. And so jump to today, Colonel Hunt is no longer in the military, but he's become a bounty hunter. And he is tracking this guy who is an assassin who kills people by blowing stuff up, usually buildings with his target in it. And so that guy was in Chicago trying to blow something up and kill some people. And he was stopped. So they relocated the people to Atlanta, and he is now coming to Atlanta, and that's where Snow lives. And so Colonel Hunt comes to Snow, goes, "This is your city. Help me." And so they're on the trail of this guy who blows stuff up. And there's a lot of other stuff that happens too, some of the family stuff and all this. But, yeah, but Colonel Hunt's been a long time coming because before he was called Snow, before I changed the name, Hunt was going to be the guy. His name was going to be Hunt instead of Snow.
Nice.
I don't remember exactly why I changed it, but I like just Snow worked better. And so I ended up with two characters for the price of one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
so,
two for the price of one.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You never throw any ideas away. We tell this story and it's a one-and-done story, but there are things that we're setting up, things that will happen in Season 2.
Sure.
And then, of course, with book eight, which I've just started loosely plotting, Book 8, we're going to do that thing that all, you know, most, because these are very much based on the 70s and 80s detective shows. We're going to do something every 70s and 80s show did at one time. We're going to Hawaii.
Nice.
Book 8 is going to be called Snow Island. So they're going to be in Hawaii for an adventure.
Nice.
Yep.
Cool,
yeah,
man.
I've got to find a way to work snow into every one of the, you know. But,
wow.
But no,
oh, yeah.
You know,
I have pictured President Snow from The Hunger Games. I keep thinking.
We talked earlier. Yeah, I get a lot of people calling him Jon Snow because of the Game
of
Thrones.
Yeah, you got Jon Snow, too, Game of Thrones.
I mentioned earlier I wrote that Starship Webster episode. And so there's another ship. It's the guest star who's on another ship. And so I named him Captain Snow. So we know Snow's ancestors live in the Star Trek time.
Nice. That is awesome. Oh, my God.
Probably nobody
will
catch that but me. Yeah, but yeah.
That's awesome. Well, now we will. Now we will.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Bobby.
I
just want to make sure.
I love doing it. Yeah, I love the little Easter egg things. And
yeah.
There's a lot of those where they're connected just because I wrote something silly, you know. So
that's gold. That's gold for readers. But make sure we got that in, because that series is fantastic. Highly recommend it.
Thank you.
We're at the end of the show here, but before we get off, though, I want to make sure that folks get ways to connect you, because we do that at the end of every show. So go ahead and give your web links and any social media platforms that you want to have folks find you on.
Okay, BobbyNash.com is my main hub for everything. So everything I work on gets posted there, where I'll be, what I've done, et cetera, et cetera. Ben-books.com, B-E-N, that-books.com, that is my indie press where I do the snow books are published there, Sheriff Myers. I publish, because I started it up because nobody would hire me to do crime fiction. So I started it up to do my crime fiction there. Now, because the success of those, I get hired by other people to do crime fiction. So it's really weird, but that's the home of like the Ben Books universe, because like mm-hmm. Snow and Sheriff Myers and all Evil, they're all connected. They're all part of the same universe. Mm-hmm. Some of the secondary characters cross over, lives in the town that Sheriff Myers is, or in the county that Sheriff Myers is sheriff of. There's connections. I do all that stuff through there. So that's ben-books.com. Snow has his own site, abrahamsnow.com. I'm author Bobby Nash on Facebook. I'm Bobby Nash Writes on Instagram. I'm at Bobby mm-hmm. Nash on the thing formerly known as Twitter. I'm mm-hmm. Bobby Nash Writes on Threads. Yeah, I'm on Blue Sky, but I can't remember. I think it's just Bobby Nash. There's a Pinterest, which I think is just Bobby Nash. I have a Patreon page, which is
Patreon. Oh, you have a
Patreon.
Pinterest? Oh, well,
yeah,
then I need to be on Pinterest. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just Bobby Nash or Bobby E. Nash, one of the two. And so I try to post stuff to all those. It is Bobby Nash. Pinterest.com/Bobby Nash. And I have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/Bobby Nash. If you are a fan of like the Ben, the Sheriff Myers and the Snow, they get them first because I do them a chapter a week-ish there.
Oh, fun.
I write them there. Almost like beta readers. They get to be the beta readers as I'm writing the
mm-hmm.
chapters. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, so I do a lot of like exclusive stuff there first, and then before it goes out into the public.
Very good.
And whatnot. So.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well,
so
this has been a great visit. Yeah. Great.
I had a blast.
And as always, a million updates. I knew it would be. You're so prolific and have so much cool stuff going on. But thank you for joining us tonight, and I really appreciate it. And definitely have you back sooner than later. And of course, I'll be keeping in touch with you online, of course. And I'll say thank you, and I'll pass it over to Holly to wrap it up with you.
All right.
Well, thank you, Bobby. It has been very informative. It has been very fun. And I know everybody has all, and you definitely have to come back and tell us what you're up to, and next year.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Always thrilled to come back and chat, yeah.
Heck yeah. We have a blast. We could go on for hours and hours.
I do like to talk. It has been stated I do like to talk.
That's the problem. Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, my longest interview so far, I did one podcast, and it was a uh-huh. video one, and not only did they have questions, but people were writing in questions, and they say, how long can you stay? And I was like, I'll stay as long as people are asking questions. Five hours later,
wow.
We finally go,
whoa,
it's like 1 a.m, I think we're done.
So five hours
is my upper range so far.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. That's awesome.
So yeah, right. You guys ever want to do a marathon?
Yeah, there you go. We need to do that one. I'd have a marathon. Yeah. That'd be fun. Yeah. Giving me ideas.
All right.
That 24-hour episode.
That's right. That's right. There you go. Well, thank you for joining us, man. It's been great. And we wish you all the best and much success, you know,
thank
in
you
your
very
endeavor.
Much.
Thank you.
I had a blast. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, we want to invite everybody next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Another great guest. Another great talk. And for the rest of the week, be creative. Good night, all.